Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 5, delivered on September 5, 2017. The title of this lecture is Financial Statements.
Today, financial statements.
I'm going to begin with introducing you to a website here. And then I'm going to give you a little background. SEC.gov. Now, the Securities and Exchange Commission is the repository of all reported information by public companies. SEC.gov. A little bit of background to start you off, and this is kind of an important lecture because your first pop quiz is coming up. Hint, hint. So I'm going to give you some information that will help you find the information that you would need to do that quiz. Now, the first thing that we have to note is that corporations fall into two broad categories with respect to reporting. There are private corporations, and they are not subject to reporting to the government as far as detailed audited financial statements and all this other information. And then there are the public corporations. They have elected to sell stock or something that requires them to then report forever after that to the SEC. Now, the benefit of a public corporation is that you can sell common stock or whatever to the public, and you have to file special forms to do it and all that, and I'll get into that later. Private corporations don't have to do that. They are wholly contained within themselves. They don't have to tell anyone what they're up to, aside from some summary reporting requirements. We don't know a whole lot about these things. As researchers, as investors. Now, if some company that's private wants to raise money, it has to do it under very specific conditions. There are exemptions from reporting to the SEC, but you have to be careful about selling stock that way. We don't know much about these private corporations, though, because they don't show their documents to the public, and we can't go and look at them. Now, if you're an investor and they're asking you for money, you can say, well, I want to see your financial statements. And they're not going to get any money unless they show those to the investors. But other than that, to the public, they don't have to. So all we can do is really talk a lot much about public corporations. Filings. Now, this is company Edgar search, the company filing search. And then from there, you can actually key in either the name of a company or its trading symbol. Now, if you're keying in the name of a company, that can be risky because you can have a lot of corporations with the same name reporting to the government. Like, for example, if I type in Sears, I'm going to get a whole lot of companies. Watch. Oh, well, whatever, you know, if you want to see it, then let me back up here. I'm going to back up two screens so you can know what I'm talking about. starting off the week. Good. Okay, well, if that projector can warm up here a little bit. A little bit of background. The SEC... Their disclosure system at the SEC is called EDGAR, E-D-G-A-R. This is the is there some reason that sucks? Is there a hand crank on it? Or maybe a flashlight you could put behind it? What? Seriously? Well, anyway, the EDGAR filing system All companies report on this. I was one of the first Edgar filers for companies, and I made some decent coin doing it. Now I can't do it because they have all these. That's weird. It just turned back off again. Well, this might be a short life. No, it won't. I'll figure out some way to get this to go. The projector is warming. Please wait. Yeah. But anyway, okay. While that's showing up, there's what you're going to look for on the SEC's main website is filings. There's a strip of tabs up at the top, and what you're going to look for is filings. And there's a drop-down menu. That's very strange. But anyway, on the let me see what the next, what you'll see when you drop down the menu, and I can show you that while that's, oh, Edgar search tools, okay. What in the world is going on? It keeps saying that it's warming up and then it doesn't turn on. Okay, that time seems to be acting like it's going to do it. Okay, and then under the filings, what you're going to do is you're going to see a drop-down menu, and the top one, Edgar Search Tools. I'm going to have to get this projector working here, and it's just acting like it doesn't want to do anything. You click on this one, it's the top one. You click on that, and then you're going to be taken to a screen. And that will be the one where you're going to find the company company or file name. This is really strange. It's just not going to do it. Well, that's going to be a short thing if I can't get that to work. I don't use the projector that often, and now when I do, oh, here we go. Oh, obviously, they are going to prepare financial statements. Yeah, that's exactly right. For one thing, they're going to prepare the, in some ways, they might actually have to show more detailed documentation to investors than you might do to the SEC. Because if I've got $100 million and someone asks me to invest, I'm going to want to pick that company apart in all kinds of ways. So I'm going to want to see their financial statements. And any prudent corporation is going to be preparing those anyway for its internal purposes. Bear with me one second. Okay, well, now I know. So I miss the old days when everything was on stone tablets we held up. Yeah.
Those were heavy. I figured the first guy broke one of them.
Yeah, I know. It ruined my publishing career. Okay. There's the SEC's main page. Okay, but anyway, the income statement, again, it's some companies call it the P&L or the profit and loss. It can be called the statement of consolidated earnings or the statement of earnings. So you've got to watch out for that when I say, all right, I want you to look something up in this finance, for this company, some financial information. You can kind of wonder, well, okay, is this the document I want? Once you get into it, you'll be able to tell, but sometimes it's even not that easy. Okay, filings. Now, you can either click here and go to company, this top one, or a faster track is to just simply go and say filings. Oop, really? Those pop-ups need to die. Company filing search, okay? Now, this is going to take you, again, if you just type in Sears, you're going to get a whole lot. Look at that. All those different companies. There's most of them are subsidiaries or pieces or holdings, but they're not the main company. It's going to work a lot better if you key in the ticker symbol or the CIK. The ticker symbol is actually, the way I do it, I kind of cheat. And it's going to be like, go to someplace like finance.yahoo.com. And then you can, from there, you can just type in the company name and it'll show you the symbol, Netflix. And that should be NFLX. NFLX. So that gives you the name that you can key in here. Otherwise, once you get familiar with a few companies, you'll begin to remember their trading symbols, NFLX. And here is the beast. All of the company's filings. Now, starting out, the one you're looking for, the big annual one, is called the 10K. The 10K is filed every year, and it is a monster document. I used to write these, and that was how I made a decent amount of money, because they were just so thorough. Full disclosure about everything required under the Securities and Exchange Commission's regulations pursuant to the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, the whole nine yards. Now, the Qs are the quarterlies. You can think of each of the K as the consolidation of the four quarters. This one is the 8K. The 8K is these are periodic filings, the Qs and Ks, 10K and 10Q. Those are periodic filings. They are required to be done by period. Now, the 8K is a disclosure document that talks about things that are not recurring, something that has not happened before or something that is not in the normal course of business. You are the CEO of the corporation. You die. We file an 8K about that. You are the CFO of the corporation. You get abducted by aliens. I have to report that. You decide that you're going to do a pump and dump run with your company by pumping up press release. We're doing this incredible thing, and to push the stock price up so that your friends can sell their stock. Well, then I have to file an 8K. That's an on-recurring event. It's not periodic. So all of those, and then you've got some that are like disclosures of insiders in trading. Now, insiders can trade in the stock, but they have to do so in specific time frames and only at specific limits on how much stock they can sell. You would also have something like that if stock is issued to someone. So there are all of these different forms, and what we're aiming for is to find a 10K. Now, the information is going to be old, as you can see, but it's important to get to it, and here we go. This is going to be useful to you. Oh, this is long. Probably it's going to be better to just simply search 10K. Whoops, that didn't happen. Oh, my Noom lock is off. 10K. There we go. And this is the latest one. Now, here's what's going to be nice for you. First things first is if we're looking for purely financial information, go to the interactive, and something amazing will happen. The first thing is that you can download all of the financial statements of any public corporation as an Excel document. And then you can chew it up yourself. You can make tables for your reports in some of your classes right off the Excel table. Watch what will happen when I do this. Now, I warn you, this thing is monstrous, okay, because it's going to have a lot of documents that you're not going to need or you probably would rather not have right in your face. Consolidated Statement of Operations. This one, actually, Netflix has its income statement up front fairly quickly. As you can see on there, let me bring that up, size that up a little bit for you. All of the information right there already in Excel. You can make your tables for your reports and your term papers and whatever you need it for. Do your calculations right there off the front end of this of the Excel sheet. And this is true for every public corporation. You can download the full Excel sheet of all of their financial statements. Now, they call theirs the statement of the Consolidated Statement of Operations. That's the income statement. It used to be we had to report quite a few years. Now it's only 3 years, but there you go. All of this stuff right there for you to look at. And I'm going to go back to this in a minute, but this is Netflix. Right off the bat, before you start doing calculations, I want you to start getting into the habit of thinking about what it is you see. Now, sir, you look at that income statement. Is there anything right at the revenue line that tells you this is good or this is bad? Let's try this. $5.5 billion, $6.8 billion, $8.8 billion. What do you see in that? Is it? Yes. Is that good or is that bad? That's good. Yes. That's all I wanted from you right off the bat. As we look at things more and more, more is revealed to us. And that's one of the things that's an impatience with some teachers is that, well, you've got to see everything right away. Well, no, it kind of reveals itself over time. You might live in a house for 5 years before you realize that it's haunted. But one day you say, well, there's a ghost standing there and it's got an axe. Well, that's the problem is once you see the axe, then he's going to use it on you. There. But anyway, okay. So right off the bat, we see something healthy here. Revenues increasing aggressively and hoping that there's not phony accounting going on. That's a good sign that this is a growing company. Now, the one thing that I want to make sure that you know, a little formula starting right off the bat, just a nice little formula, and you can actually do this in Excel. You can open up a couple of rows or columns to do this automatically. This is the percent change is always the ending value minus the beginning value over the beginning value. It's a crucial thing in our business because we really don't care about absolute changes. What we care about are percentage changes. So in this case, if I were to, and follow with me, because eventually this is going to be a project for you in the class, one of our class projects. I'm going to open up a couple of rows here. Insert a row, and here I'm going to insert a row. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that on this row, it's going to equal this number, whoops, I didn't mean that, this number minus this number, close the parentheses, divided by this number. And I'm going to change that to a percentage, format it to a percentage. I can't see that, so I assume that's... So in other words, from 2014 to 2015, revenues increased by 23.16%. Now, let's see what happens in the next period. That's a nice sign. That tells us right now that the percentage increase in revenues is accelerating. That's a good sign right there. And then we can just crank down the line with these. Get a couple of error rows here. I'm going to take it down to net income. I know, divide by zero. The universe ends when I do that. Is that the only one? Okay, good. So we can see the trends. Now let's talk about cost of revenues. The revenues went up by 23.16% from 14 to 15, and they actually declined relative to revenue. Do you see that? The relative to revenue, their cost declined. Revenue went up by 23.16%, but cost went up only 22.35%. So retail was pulling ahead of wholesale. Unfortunately, from 15 to 16, it wasn't quite as bright. Revenues went up 30% and costs went up 31%. So there's a little bit of an issue there. And that was a pretty significant jump from 22% rise to 31%. So it's not as quite as rosy as we would want. Now, crucially important here, add a line, add a row. And it's important for you to take equals this minus this. Companies aren't required to report this line anymore. But you'll see it in the book. And you'll also see it. Oops. In my analysis. Important here is what's called gross profit or gross income. And I'm going to write it over here. It's an important line. And let me explain what it means. Gross revenue is revenue. Gross income. Duh. Gross income is revenue minus your cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold is what is directly attributable to the product you sell. In other words, this is not your electric bill, your printing expenses, your marketing, your wages and salaries. This is the cost that is directly attributable to what you sold, dollar for dollar. Give you an example in my business. I am an artist. Okay, there are a lot of costs in my business. But if I put up an artwork in an exhibition, I've got the print, I can value that exactly. I've got the frame, the museum glass, the mats, the dry mount, the wires, those I can say, all right, that $350 artwork had these exact costs in that thing that I'm looking at. That would be a cost of goods sold. That would be on that cost of revenues line. It's got different names. However, there are things that happen in my business, like the cost of the gasoline driving around, the cost of the setup wire frames and tent and all the tables, and just the cost of my time doing this, the cost of paying for the people who do the professional framing and all that. See there, I can't count those up here. So this is just pure wholesale cost. And what this line right here means, the gross income, how much of every dollar that you made came directly out from that dollar. So in other words, what I can say here is if I do this, if I look at December 2014, I made $5.5 billion and directly attributable to each dollar was $1.75 billion. So in other words, doing a really quick, dirty calculation here, I would take 1.75 divided by 5.5, just a quick, dirty calculation. In other words, 31 cents of every dollar that I made survived wholesale. That's about 32 cents. 32 cents of every dollar that came in I can keep to pay bills that are not directly attributable. Now, some businesses have a gross margin. Gross margin. Your gross income divided by your your revenues, rather. Now, if I did that over here, for the next time, for not 2015, remember the 32 cents. Survived wholesale costs per dollar. Now I could do it again for 2015 and have a look again. 2.18 divided by 6.7. Again, 32 cents survived. Not bad. It looks like they're holding a very tight line between revenue and costs and wholesale. Okay, let's try it one more time. Let's try over here, equals 2.8 billion divided by 8.8 billion. Whoops. Huh? Let's try that again. Equals that divided by that. Little bit of a slip there. Just a little bit. Not much. Nothing to worry too much about. But when you're in the billions of dollars, every penny is going to count. And I want to talk about that in a minute. That's gross margin. That's your first ratio that you learn, is how much of every dollar that comes into the cash drawer survives paying the wholesalers who brought that product to your shelves. Now, just a couple. This can be all kinds of things, from one financial statement to another. This is probably general and administrative, probably includes your sales costs, your wages and salaries. technology and development, this is the amount of what you have capitalized for your research and development that you can expense in the current period. Marketing, about the same. How much of your marketing campaigns can you are capitalized, and then how much can you actually put on your financial statements for the current period? Takes us to this one, operating income. This is how many, and if you do the operating margin, equals this, your operating income divided by your revenue. 7 cents for 2014, about 400 million divided by 5.5 billion is about 7 cents. That's how much of every dollar that came in survived wholesale and all of your normal business expenses. 7 cents of every dollar. That's not a shocking number. That's actually not that unusual to see something that small. These are massive corporations, and that's why the scale of them is so fundamental to the modern capitalism. You've got to make a huge amount of revenue for there to be a lot of money down at the bottom line after you've spent a lot of money to keep your company going. Anyway, the next thing is your interest expense. Now, I forgot to tell you something. Operating income is also called EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. Don't be fooled. If I say report the EBIT for the last 10K, that's the same as operating income. It's the same thing, okay? Earnings before interest and taxes. In other words, how much money has survived paying the bills of the business operations, including your wholesale costs, your salaries, all of your light bills, your postage, your meals and entertainment, everything. This is how much survived, and now you've got the money, the earnings before interest and taxes, to pay your interest on your debt, interest expense. In this case, this company has $50 million to pay. Now, we're going to do a ratio here. We're going to say, all right, how many times over? We're going to take EBIT, and we're going to divide it by the interest expense. Well, that's an absolute value there. I think this is the formula for it. Again, operating income or EBIT divided by interest expense. This is how many times over you can pay your interest expense with the money that's available to pay the interest expense. Again, let me repeat this. The EBIT, this is called times interest earned. What I just did, the EBIT divided by the interest expense is called times interest earned. It is how many times over you can pay your interest with the money available to pay it. In this case, in 2014, Netflix had 8 times what they needed to pay their interest expense. First things first, if this number is ever less than 1, the company is dead, because it doesn't have the money to pay its debt. Again, I've said this before, and let me say it again. You can screw your stockholders all you want, but the minute you don't pay your debt holders, they can shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your mom wear furry costumes. They can destroy you.
It is the only way, technically, that a corporation can die. So you don't want that number to be below one, ever. Now let's look at it. It's 8 times in 2014. Let me go over here and do it again for 2015. Ow! Look at that. It dropped to 2.3. Do you see it was about just a little above 8? And in 2015 it dropped to 2.3? Well, that's a little disturbing. Let's see what happens in 2016. Well, I'm excited. Remember 2.3? Let's see what's going on here. Okay. Well, let me put it over there and one more time. By the way, this is so much more joyful to do this with Excel than it used to be back in the day when we didn't have Excel to do this. Okay, now we're going to take 3.797 divided by 1.5. Survey says a little bit of a recovery there. Happy days. Again, below one is a disaster. However, if the number is too high, in other words, if they have too much money to pay their interest expense, that is a bother to me as well, simply because it means that they are not using enough debt in their capital structure. The more debt you use, the riskier it gets, because you can get to the point where you can't pay your interest. But the more debt you use, the more you are leveraging the equity, the more you will make on other people's money for your owners. So in other words, below one or close to one is scary. Too high, though, is a sign of some kind of inefficiency in the corporation's willingness. Talk to me. I was going to bring that up later, but let me address it now. There are companies that say, we will not get into debt. There are people who are of an opinion, neither a borrower nor a lender be, I will not borrow money. They are praiseworthy. Give them a cookie. However, they are not leveraging, and in one sense, they are not fulfilling their fiduciary duty to their company, because they could make more for their owners if they had some debt in their capital structure. Did you pay full cash for your house? You did not? No, I've seen your house. It's a hovel, but it's nice. You know, it's homey. Yes, it was, as a matter of fact. You were eating something that looked good, and I said, yeah, you eat that, bro. Anyway, and there are people in this world, I've just been so frustrated. Students just didn't have the money to finish their college education, and they had religious objections to borrowing money, and so they simply did not finish their education, and therefore their prospects for getting high-end jobs were just shot, because they would not leverage. And I understood their religious objection, and I also understood the fear of the risk that you couldn't pay. We're going to talk about those risks in a while. The bottom line here, though, is that one of the ratios that we will look at is called the ROE, the return on equity, which is your net income divided by shareholders' equity. So if you can make net income get bigger, but have shareholders' equity stay the same or be small, in other words, you're not using owners' money, ROE increases. And the more you can magnify net income off borrowed money, that's money that you're not blowing up the equity denominator with. So in other words, I can magnify my owners. Stop selling stock. Don't get money that way. You borrow money to grow, and that will make net income increase, but you will not have shareholders' equity increase. You're not selling more stock to get your operation, your money for your plant and equipment. So ROE will magnify. It's dangerous. Don't get me wrong. This is risk. When you're borrowing money, you might not have the revenue to pay it back. But at the same time, we'll talk more about what are called the gains to leverage very shortly in this class. Moving on down here, anyway, I can see, and I'm going to talk about Netflix a little more seriously here in just a minute, about what's going on. You notice that clearly they borrowed money. See how their interest expense went up? They obviously borrowed money. And we're going to talk about what that means a little later. Other interest, they made some money off investments and all that kind of stuff. Geez, silly, whoa. Okay. And then your income before taxes, EBT. This is sometimes called EBT, income before taxes. You've paid your interest, and now all you have to do is have the money to pay Uncle Sugar. Okay. And then here's the taxes they paid. You notice that they have a rather rough fluctuation. But that can be caused by all kinds of things. Tax loss, carry forwards, that kind of stuff. This line is kind of dodgy. In accounting terms, what we would really care about is cash flow. We'll talk about that in a minute. Here's the last one. This is the gravy line, the net income, otherwise sometimes called earnings, net. This is your net income. Notice that their net income actually plunged from 14 to 15, from 266.8 million to 122.6 million. The technical term for that is they took an ass bath. And that would have scared the life out of any investor. But then they rose from the ashes like a phoenix, a 52% increase in net from 15 to 16. Good times. Not as good as it was in 14, but boy, it's a heck of a lot better than what happened in 15. Now, this one is called the net margin. See this money right here? That belongs to the owners. Net income, that is the owner's money. They've paid all of their debts, and so the residual claim the shareholders have, and again, write that down, the residual claim is right there at the net income line. The money above there doesn't belong to the shareholders until the debts are paid. The debt holders, all of them, have the prior claim. If you shut down, if you can't pay the debt holders, there ain't going to be any money for the shareholders. So in other words, and again, the shareholders have the last claim, the residual. See all those payments above? Marketing, technology and development, general and administrative, interest expense, taxes paid to the government. Those all have to come first. Every one of those has a prior claim. You have to satisfy them before anything can be distributed to the shareholders. Now, at this bottom line, this number, 267 million in 14, 123 million in 15, and 187 million in 16, that belongs to the shareholders. The company, as I told you before, can pay some of it in dividends. Or they can plow back into the company's operations to grow the corporation. That's why we call, see this money? 267, 123, 187. That's actually, we call that internally generated equity. It's equity. It's like you sell stock, that's externally generated equity dollars. This is internally generated equity dollars. It's actually one of the two major forms of equity. Equity dollars, I should say. People think, well, they raise money by selling stock. Well, that's the fancy way. The old-fashioned way is to earn money. Now, let me show you this last ratio. This is called net margin. Net margin is where you take the bottom line, the net income, divided by the top line, the revenue. That tells you how many pennies out of every dollar of sales belong to the shareholders. In 2014, 4.8 cents made it to the shareholders. In 2015, 1.8 cents survived to the shareholders. And let's hope that looks a little better this in 2016. 186.678 divided by revenues of 8.8, 2 cents. 2 cents. Not spectacular by any means, but there you go. That was what survived to the shareholder. 2 cents of every dollar. Every dollar that came into the cash register, two pennies made it to the point where the shareholders could have it, either as dividends or as plowback investment into the corporation. What number should be there? Actually, that's kind of an interesting thing. Because you'll see some businesses, again, this number, the net income divided by the revenue is called net margin. Net margin can actually, it depends on the company and the industry. There are net margins that can be above 60, 70%. A lot of times, companies that are pure service can be have incredibly high net margins because they just don't have a whole lot of expenses, so a lot survives to the bottom line. Then there are other companies that have ludicrously tiny, a penny or two. The massive oil companies, you know, those giants of ExxonMobil and all those, their net margins are like a penny or so on the dollar. But the scale of their operations is insanely large. So a penny on every dollar, when you magnify that to hundreds of billions of dollars, the shareholders do great. This is an interesting tale, too. There are these companies that are love children of Wall Street that most people wouldn't even think of as being worth investing in. A good example of that, Aldi's. Now, personally, I don't like Aldi's because Aldi's, they make you pay rent for your shopping cart. And then there's Dollar Tree. Now, Dollar Tree is a great store. You know, 10 bucks, 10 gifts for Christmas. Sure. But, I mean, think about the a Dollar Tree. They might pull in $75 a day in sales. They might go through maybe $50 of that, $60, $70 in each in revenue, or rather in expenses on a store. But think about how those kinds of stores work. They have, on a daily basis, a net of, let's say, $2 survives. But then they have 5,000 stores. So they have $10,000 per day times 360 days per year. So the entire network of those little stores, with each of them having a tiny margin, comes 360, 1, 2, 3, 4. $36 million a year in shareholders' claim. That's how a lot of businesses became so huge. the candy manufacturers, they didn't go for the Hail Mary, one product, $100 million. They went for tiny pieces of candy where their net on each piece of candy was less than a penny. But they sold hundreds and hundreds of millions of those little pieces of candy or little toys. And they made absolute fortunes for the original founders, the Kraft family and those kinds of people, on tiny margins per unit, but insanely large margins once you multiply it by how many of those they sold. This is an important tale for businesses these days. Too many young entrepreneurs think that they have to go for the long ball. I'm going to make my million the first year. No. You play it like the old coaches used to play football, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And that is an interesting thing about the how you become successful is sometimes it isn't the long pass that wins in one play, but it's just every day coming back in there and having something that people make fun of and criticize, but when you retire at the age of 40, you're walking away laughing your butt off at them. Anyway, now that was enough of that. I'm sneaking things, and I'm going to go further with ratios in the next one. But let's go over here. Statement of really? Well, this. Now you have to start searching for a lot of there. Really? Balance sheets. Yeah. Okay. Now here's the problem with the balance sheets. The balance sheets used to have to report more years. Now they've crunched it down so that you don't have to report, but the companies are reporting only 2 years. And that's unfortunate here because something happened in 2014 to 2015 that was a major change for the corporation. But if we look at these, and I'm going to try to magnify this a little bit more. Now, cash and cash equivalents. You notice that the cash has fallen. Okay. But tell me this. Just a simple point. Oh, well, sir, do you have $1.467 billion in your pocket? If you did, what would you do? Yeah, get a bigger pair of pants to hold it all. But what would you do if you had that cash like that? Yeah, but I know I'd buy some friends, but
I'm not invested.
Yeah, you see, that's the problem. Is cash is great because it allows you what we call that liquidity, and I mean these people have liquidity, insane amounts of liquidity. But the problem with liquidity is you don't earn much on liquidity. You earn on long-term investments. Holding cash, you're not going to make hardly any money off cash. So Netflix, and I'll tell you the story now. Well, actually, you can see it here. Long-term debt. See their long-term debt line? If you had seen 2014, that number would have been ridiculously small. This number would have been tiny by comparison if you could see it. But look at their long-term debt position. They've been borrowing money. They did an offering of debt, and it was huge on the scale of $1.1 billion. Okay? And you can see that money is still, they're still selling more debt, getting more, borrowing more. That's what you mean. Borrowing means selling debt instruments. Look at this company. It's borrowing money out the wazoo. And it jumped, and it is spending some of that cash. See it? But it's keeping huge amounts of it. That's a worry because they're borrowing money. They have to pay a higher interest rate. They're paying an interest rate on borrowed money, and yet they're just keeping it as cash. Now, obviously, they spent about $350 million, something like that, between 15 and 16, but they've still got a massive amount of cash that's not earning much interest, but that money came from debt that clearly they're paying a pretty serious interest on, at least compared to what they're earning on that cash. So what's going on? Is this a worry? Yes, but it's also something else. Ma'am, why would you keep a large amount of money on your person? Good. That's the first part. She said, in case you need to buy something. Why are any of you, do any of you go to flea markets and estate sales or anything like that? Yeah. You and I, we go to those kinds of things. Now, usually you find nothing there that is useful. But suppose that you're walking around and you're an expert in art. And you look at this piece of art and it's just kind of crummy, looking dusty. But you brush it. Oh my God, that's a Vermeer. They want $500 for it. They don't know what... Oh, man, I got a 20. You don't have the money for the opportunity. You see, if I've got all that money in savings and in stock investments, I won't have it in time. In other words, what the speculation might be that what we're seeing there in those cash equivalents is a war chest. A war chest for an opportunity, waiting for something to happen, waiting for something that could be a good bargain, waiting for something that has fallen down that's still worth grabbing, waiting for something that is desperate that will unload itself onto a white knight. That's possibly what's going on here. Netflix is, well, what would Netflix be looking for? Any guess? Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
The digital rights to streaming.
Okay. These are the ones, most likely. Although there are a lot of other possibilities, it looks like possibly either streaming or they're looking for a production studio. Some place. They make all these TV shows, all of these movies now. It is quite possible that they want to step up to the plate. It's also no doubt that if they're going to keep on the edge against Apple, Google, and several others, they're going to have to get serious about stream, getting into that. We don't know for sure, but the problem is that we're seeing them holding this money worrisomely long. What are they waiting for? Are they just sitting around hoping for a bargain, or do they know something is coming and they're holding on to the war chest for the possibility? This is what we do. This is the actually, if it might, I'm using the term you might not think it is, but this is the fun part. Get the numbers under your belt and then get past the numbers. Ask yourself not the what, but the why. Why did Netflix borrow all of this money? See this debt? Why did they borrow all that money? Why did they put it into cash instead of long-term investments? And why are they keeping it in cash even though the opportunity cost of doing so is pretty high? What's going on? And then you start saying, okay, then the next question is, if they're waiting to grab something, what is it? Because Netflix would no longer be the good investment at that. Oh, shut up. Netflix would no longer be the good investment. What would be the good investment is whatever it is they're aiming to hit, to take over, to grab, or to merge with. And there's a possibility, too, that there's some kind of a... See, Netflix would be a very attractive thing to merge with if it had all this cash for another company that had projects that it needed to invest in, but it was in a weaker cash position. See, when you got cash, you can make deals that you can't make if you're like, well, you hold on for 6 months while we do a public offering. Mm. Oh. I hate it when that does that. Okay, there's your balance sheet. Now, one last one I want to. An important one is the stockholders' equity. That's fine. But I'm looking for the one, their statement of cash flows. Their cash flows. Sometimes the cash flow statement is called the sources and uses statement. But I'm toggling through these actually for a purpose. Notice that a lot of these financial statements are background information. That's really a dirty secret. Sometimes I'll just do this mass thing where I'll delete a bunch of these sheets so that they're not my way. I'm looking for the statement of cash flows. Is there some reason why I can't? Ah, is that it? No, that's investments. What the heck? Really? And by the way, this is a problem. Is the organization is going to drive you crazy from one sheet to another? Come on, really? The contingencies? Gee, silly. I give up. This is why it's better if you just clean out all these superfluous sheets before you start doing analysis, which I didn't want to do to take that time. Good grief. Wait. Was that it? Tell me if you see cash, the statement of cash flows in here somewhere. Huh? You did? Well, really? And you didn't say anything to me? You just let me toggle through all these? Seriously? There's a net income. Because a comprehensive income statement, consolidated. Consolidated. Oh, there it is. Yes, it's there. Okay, now I'm not going to go through cash flow. If you like that kind of stuff, you're an accountant. My interest here is in looking at what the actual change in cash has been. And in this case, I'm seeing all of the pieces of the information showing up here, so I can tell where the cash went to. But what's interesting to me is, notice that, first of all, net income really isn't an actual physical amount. What we have to do is adjust all of the different ways that net income is influenced by non-cash flow items. So the interest that I have here is to see, all right, Netflix's cash position went down from 1.8 to 1.4. So I'm looking for the place where that could have happened. And I'm not really, oh, there it is. See the proceeds from the issuance of debt. See how they have actually been growing their debt. There's where the cash is coming in. There's that 2014. See what I was telling you about? They issued a pile of debt, and that blew up their cash balance, made it go huge. And then more came in, but they've spent money somewhere, and I'm not looking at it. Okay. They did buy something. Look at all this. You see this? They're buying stuff right here. Purchase of property and equipment. That's not a lot, but that explains how they were dropping, why it was falling. So the bottom line here, though, is that they're buying stuff, but they still have this massive amount of cash that's still sitting there on their balance sheet. And then the next question would be, okay, why is it there? What are they after? What's their intention? They're not stupid, obviously. They're keeping it for a reason, and it has to be an awfully good reason, because look at all this, that money is coming from borrowing. You can see it down here again. See all that? Look at that. Money came in 2014, $400 million. But by 2015, they had drawn in $1.5 billion and another $1 billion here. So something is on their minds. And so the question is, what, and does that make Netflix a good investment? Now we take over to here and get rid of this for a while because it gets really tedious. But again, all you need for a lot of your quantitative analysis and reports, term papers, just pull down the Excel spreadsheet from Edgar and you're there. Now I'm going to take you over here to finance.yahoo.com. Not the best site in the world, but two things that I want to bring up here. We're going to talk about Netflix, NFLX. And here's Netflix. And let me blow this up a little bit for you so you can see it a little better. Now, stocks are going to be on edge. The markets are edgy right now because the rumblings of war are kind of shaking. There's still a mentality that I am hearing on the street, nah, couldn't be. But there's still enough of a jitteriness knowing the kinds of people who are involved in the decision-making on whether we'll nuke each other or not, that there's a little bit of concern there. One thing that I want to warn you about, financials. You've got it. These are actually taken from Edgar, direct feed. The problem is that they glitch, and you can get numbers that are wrong. And it's very common for the interest expense to be an incorrect number on these that are taken from Edgar. Just go to the source, and then you'll get it. Very quickly, I want to look at something here. I want to look at the five-year. Over a period of 5 years, what do you see? Just gut. What do you see? What has been the behavior of investors? This is what investors have decided about this company. This is not analysts in their academic world. This is not day traders in their little tiny dinky computers. This is the consensus of the entire ocean of the market. Good investment or bad investment? Talk to me. Look at the stock price. What do you see? You see it going down. Over the 5 years, look at the trend. Yes, that's a trending upward. And it has had its down. See this stroke in here? Look at that dead tissue right in there. That was in the period right before Netflix made its run with borrowing money. Do you see how the market saw Netflix step up to the plate, borrow boatloads of money, and that's when analysts like me said, ah, it's about time for them to put on the big boy pants and do something serious. We've been sitting here waiting for them to do it, and it's been slacking because we're concerned. What is it they are going to do? They better pull that trigger sooner or later. So we've got a little dead spot in here. But overall, our assessment was that we were not happy until Netflix decided that it was going to borrow a huge amount of money to do something. And this is all forward thinking about what it is they were going to do. We don't know yet. We just don't know. Now, the next thing that you want to look at real quick here is, well, the problem is we're in the middle of the day here. The price right now is 174.19. The one-year target is 185.29. So what that means is that there is at least some analysts have said that the one-year rate of return, the expected, is going to is 185 and minus right now 174.20 and minus begin over begin. See that formula showing up again? Over and over again it happens. And if we take that formula Where's my stupid calculator? There it is. And I'm going to take, I'm going to take the scientific version of it. I'm going to take one, Open the parentheses. Okay, I'll just take 185 point what? 29 minus 174.20. Divided by 174.20. And then times that by 100. That's the capital gain that's expected off this stock over the next year. That's not the only place, because this stock also would yield a dividend that would add to the full the total gain. The problem is, you notice Netflix doesn't pay a dividend. They plow back every penny of shareholders' money into the company. So the market is assessing only a 6.37% return on this stock over the next year. That's a low ball. That's not a very good expectation. Although, the market is also saying this is a very low-risk stock. That beta is the beta of a very safe stock. Safety means low return, low expected return. So maybe it's an investment, but it's not going to be one the market thinks you're going to make a fortune off. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.